right, we got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. You don't got time for that. All right, let's go. Break it, Glenn Ross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert and Derek Johnson on FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN.
What's happening? Welcome in to another edition of RCST. Stands for Rock Chalk Sports Talk, if you're new to the program. I'm Derek Johnson. I'm filling in for Nick Schwert today on a Thursday. We got basketball coming at you tonight on KLWN, KU, and Washburn. That one will be at 7 o'clock. Pregame will start at 5:30 right here on KLWN. This is going to be a little bit confusing, but pregame will take you to 7. Then on KLWN, we're going to switch over to coverage of the KU women's basketball team at 7:15. So hear all the pregame, you'll hear the start of the game. If you just want to hear the men's game, you can go to our sister station, 105.9 KISS. And then, like I said, if you want to hear the women's game, you'll be able to hear that right here on KLWN at 7:15 after we give you some other coverage of KU basketball. We'll actually be joined by the guy who will be on the call of the men's game. That is the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney. He's going to join us in about 30 minutes from right now. So KU takes on Washburn tonight. By the way, did you know today is the 64th year anniversary of Wilt Chamberlain's Kansas debut, in which he scored 52 points and grabbed 31 rebounds. They were playing against Northwestern in that game. I remember I had Tom Hedrick on. It might have been last year. It was on the anniversary of Wilt's 100-point game, I believe. And he was talking about just the aura around Wilt after that opening game. Because remember, this is back in a time when freshmen weren't playing. And so he sits out his freshman year. And then in his first game as a sophomore, essentially, I guess nowadays it'd be more like a redshirt sophomore, but as a sophomore, he goes out and puts up 52 points and 31 rebounds. I would honestly be interested to know, like, and this would be way too much research. I'm not going to put this much effort in, sorry. To know, like, how many times in college basketball history, heck, maybe even just like that season, maybe just like this season or something, teams have not, like teams, a whole team, has not scored 52 points in a game or grabbed 31 rebounds. And Wilt Chamberlain did it all by himself in that game. Greatest Kansas basketball player of all time. Now, you get into the discussion of best player versus greatest legacy. If you're talking about most accomplished, the greatest legacy, it's Danny Manning, right? But if you're just talking about, you know, who you taking, give me prime Wilt against any best individual season of a KU basketball player, and you're putting together your starting five, like, he's going to be the number one pick. I know all the conversation is, oh, MJ or LeBron. I'm still aboard, like, the Wilt Chamberlain. I get, like, the, oh, but the competition wasn't as good. Well, we don't judge success and legacy based on, you know, it's based on what you did in your time versus your competition. And yes, we can grade it a little bit on a curve, but to act like Wilt Chamberlain was just going up against a bunch of 6'3" janitors, like, okay, he went up against Bill Russell, and when he went up against Bill Russell, he averaged like 50-30, you know? And he's renowned as maybe the best defensive center of all time. Or he goes up against like other guys. I mean, it's not like he was playing. Wes Unseld is a dude who's like 280 pounds. He was like 6'10". You know, he's not just going up against, like I said, a bunch of janitors. And it always cracks me up. You'll see, like James Harden. He'll have, like, a streak where he has, like, oh, 12 games in a row for James Harden of 30 points and 10 rebounds or something. And then it'll be like, here's the longest streaks of those. And it's like James Harden's in third all time. And in second place is, like, Karl Malone or somebody. And they have, like, 17. And then it's like, it's a bar graph and it just shoots way up. And it's like in first, it's like, Will Chamberlain had 104 straight of these. Like, you just see so many of those stats. It is so much fun to look at for Will Chamberlain. And in my eyes, the greatest basketball player of all time. And this idea that he wouldn't translate to nowadays. I mean, this dude was running like a 44-second 400 meter. I think it was the hurdles. Like, he is as fat. Like, he's basically what LeBron is to the game, except he was a few inches taller. And he couldn't shoot as much, you know? Like, that's the difference there. Because if they would have counted, you know, blocks, like, there might have been some seasons he averaged double-digit blocks. He would have had a bunch of quadruple doubles. This is a guy who averaged 5-6 assists per game at the center spot in an era where you're not really running your offense through, like, the high post to your big man to let him dice it up like you see nowadays with guys like Bam Adebayo and Nikola Jokic. He was basically LeBron, just without the shooting, but a couple inches taller. I mean, you're talking about a guy who, I forget if it's that he benched or squatted more than like Shaq did, weighs more than Shaq. He's just like really fast. Olympic volleyball player. I mean, you can also make the argument that he's the greatest athlete of all time, right? Ran track and field at KU, was really good at it. Maybe the greatest volleyball player of all time. Like, imagine trying to play volleyball with Wilt, one of the best basketball players of all time. Cheers to Will Chamberlain, I guess. 52 points and 31 rebounds. You know who'd be nice to have that today? David McCormick. Coming out party for Big Dave today against Washburn. I think it's going to be odd kind of seeing a game in Allen Fieldhouse, which this will be their first home game, without that ruckus home court environment. I get it. You're playing Washburn. Typically, that's not going to lead to the ruckus home court environment. But we know here at Kansas, they could line up against Sisters of the Poor, and it's going to be a sellout. And sure, it may not be juiced up to the level of KU at home against Kentucky or Baylor or Texas Tech, but it's going to be a sellout. They're going to make noise. You're not going to have that this game. And, like, watching whether it's been KU or some of these other college basketball games early on, it's really made me want to get crowd noise pumped in. Whether it's in the game or just in the broadcast, college basketball to me seems like the biggest sport that is needing the noise that gets kind of pushed into the game some way, because it just doesn't sound right right now. It didn't sound that bad in the KU opener against Gonzaga, and maybe that's because, and the next game against St. Joe's, there were like 300 fans there. I don't know if it was all fans or family or what the deal was, but at least there was some real noise there. If you're not going to have any fans in attendance, you got to pump something in. It might be the hardest sport to watch without the fan noise. Like, I found myself, you know, watching long stretches of the Illinois-Baylor game last night and the Gonzaga-West Virginia game last night and a few other games, but, like, when there's no noise around it, it is just weird. It's like watching a glorified practice. Now, as far as how, like, the fans for KU goes, obviously it's probably not going to affect what happens tonight. I do wonder, like, if in the future for the rest of the year it does lead to maybe another loss or two at home that normally KU would come out on top of. Bill Self, actually, after KU beat Kentucky, spoke about the lack of fans. Here is what he said after the game.
You know, it'll be good to be back home for the most part, so the families of the players can watch them play. You know, this is a unique deal. You have so many families that have invested so much to watch their kids play, and they can't even go watch them. And so, you know, at least our players' families can watch them play, and it's going to be different. But it's going to be different all year long, and we might as well just roll with it. But yeah, it's going to be a totally different setup all year long, where there's absolutely no normalcy. And, you know, we need to, I got a sports writer test me this almost daily, stay positive and test negative. And that's basically what I think every team's goal is right now.
So it sounds kind of like there that they'll at least be having families who can make it out. They'll be able to attend, probably similar to what we saw in like the high school sports season for football. Basketball right now, no fans in attendance. But for high school football, we saw each player was given like two tickets that they could give presumably to like their parents, but maybe they wanted to give it to a friend or something. I don't know. and those two would be permitted into the game. Outside of that, nobody else, and it allowed everybody in the stands to kind of social distance and spread out. That'll probably be the case, I would assume, based on what he said. I still don't know what to expect, but if that's the case, at least maybe that helps a little with the not needing the artificial noise stuff. But obviously, it's not going to be a ruckus environment. Maybe KU needs to bring LeGerald Vick back on the team. Has he exhausted all his eligibility? Just so you can have Lala Vick in the stands? Because I feel like that would be a huge home court advantage for you. That's what we need to figure out. Figure out the best parents of players who would give you a home court advantage. Give them the front seats or give them seats in front of the visiting bench. That's what we got to do. But as far as the matchup between KU and Washburn, you know, I could tell you about the Ichabods, which, again, I feel like we have this conversation every time they play Washburn. What is an Ichabod? I don't know. Washburn's 3-0. I could tell you that. I could tell you they shoot over 40% on threes. They take almost 25 attempts per game, and I'm sure that's going to be a number that's going to go up in this one. I could tell you that most of Washburn's players are, you know, actually around 6'3 to 6'7. They're going to probably be starting a couple guards who are 6'1 and under, but they got a lot of players on the roster who are between 6'3 and 6'7. They got a 6'9 center. So outside of that, you know, center spot and a few guards, it's not going to be a total height mismatch. I could also tell you that last season, Washburn played Kansas State. They only lost by 10 points. That's a Big 12 team. I could also tell you that Washburn has actually beaten Kansas three times in program history. But most of that would be fodder. And Washburn's a really good Division II program. This isn't to disparage what the Ichabods are doing or have done. It's just, come on. I mean, this is Kansas basketball. You are expecting to win this game going away. The last time these two played was a couple years ago. Kansas won by 27. That was an exhibition game. So you probably expect somewhere between a 20 to 30 point win. That was against a 24 win Washburn team. So if this team's really good too, you probably expect something the same. And especially you add to it with KU's ability to score and KU's personnel, when they're playing five guards, like you saw it against St. Joseph's, that's going to make it harder for some of these smaller teams who typically are going to try to contend with the heavyweights in college basketball by just shooting a lot of threes, by stretching out your big man a little bit. KU's pretty well suited to avoid teams like that, and a Washburn team who shoots over 40% from three, going to be a little harder when you're going up against KU, a team that can play the five guards out and also has a lot of length on the perimeter. So, I mean, this shouldn't be close. And the first thing I would say, like, what are we going to take away from this game, right? Because if name your player goes for 18 points on 5 of 6 from 3, are we going to walk away from that game saying, oh, Tristan Annarona, he's an elite shooter now, you know? Or are we just going to say, okay, you did what you were supposed to do? It seems like to me this is more of a work the kinks out game, which to me means KU is going to play more of their one big looks than the five guard lineups. And that's because if this is a work the kinks out game, you kind of already know what you're getting to with the five guard lineups. And that doesn't mean you don't play it at all, right? You still want to establish chemistry with that. But they have more to work on with the one big looks. I've talked about this the past couple days. Even if the primary lineup is playing the five guards, they're never going to totally abandon the one big look. And that's for a couple of reasons. One, Jalen Wilson's not going to give you 40 minutes as the five man, right? He's averaging 26 minutes per game. So realistically, KU playing a lot of five guard might be 25 to 30 minutes a game. That still leaves 10 to 15 minutes in there where you're going to need somebody else to play the five. Maybe they can find those minutes with Tristan Annarona. I just think that given Bill Self's expectations for Dave, his love of having a good big man in there, and also the idea that there will be certain matchups where KU is going to need David McCormick, they'll never truly abandon it. Which means if you have more to work on with that lineup today, you're probably going to use that more today, whether it's with Dave in there, whether it's with Mish in there, just so you feel like you get some good reps to kind of work the kinks out. You know, it's interesting because the game actually counts for KU, but it doesn't for Washburn. So you could make the case that, you know, for Washburn, if it doesn't count for them, they should be the one that's tinkering. I'm sure they will be to a certain extent. But for Kansas, this and your really your next game. I mean, you play North Dakota State next on Saturday. They're barely a top 200 team by KenPom. I mean, those are going to be two opportunities for KU to really figure yourself out a little bit more and get guys who are deeper on the rotation, deeper down the bench, a few extra minutes of audition time or of game reps. And those are important. Again, though, this all circles back to me. For the most part, you're not going to learn too much from this game. But there is a lot to gain, I think, for David McCormick, right? And it's not even as much that, like I said, if somebody went out there and scored 18 points with 5-6 from three, we're not going to come away from it saying, oh, this guy's an All-American now. And it's the same with Dave. If Dave goes out there, he gives you 15 and 8, you're not going to come away from the game just saying, okay, Dave's all better now, now he's an All-American. No, he should dominate in this game. And normally, that wouldn't mean much if he does. And I think from a perspective of does this mean anything for him in another game, it probably won't to that same idea. I mean, he's struggled, but it should be expected that he has a good game in this one. You are going to be the biggest guy on the court. You're going to be the strongest guy on the court. Dominate. I think, though, in watching Dave, like, you cannot convince me that all of his struggles are just, you know, physical or messing up on plays, right? Like, as a 6'10", strong as an ox big man, you don't shoot 25% from the field, right? Like, if Dave was having a bad stretch, he might still be shooting 40% from the field. The fact that he's shooting 25, that he's struggling to catch the basketball, that he's having some of these issues, it tells me that maybe there's something like from a mental perspective of a lack of confidence, you know, and maybe some of those struggles can be attributed to that lack of confidence, right? Like, you go out there game one and you get kind of worked, not just by Gonzaga as a team, but individually by Drew Timmy. And then in game two, you struggle again. Game three against Kentucky, you struggle some more. I'm sure things have just kind of snowballed out of control for him. And from, like, the mind perspective, everybody on the team, Bill Self always talks about it. He's got such a great attitude. He's a hard worker. Makes you think he'll be able to come out of it. I think that there's something to the idea of just dominating, even if it's against lower competition, to be able to gain that confidence that you can do it at the highest level. We saw it with, like, the Royals with Adalberto Mondesi. They called him up too soon, struggles in the majors. They send him back down, and he starts just ripping the ball in. I forget if it was double A or triple A. Then he comes back up, and he has a good stretch. There's something to the idea of being able to dominate versus lesser competition to give you more confidence for when you go in those big games. And I think for a guy that maybe needs some confidence right now, this game will mean more for him than other individual players. Go out there, put up 18 and 12, give a couple blocks in whatever, 25 minutes of work. Dominate a smaller, less physically imposing Washburn team. I don't care if what happens in the game, if a lot of his points aren't translatable for when you're playing up against a seven-footer or when you're playing the rest of the year. To me, this is all about the confidence part. And I think Dave just needs to see the ball go in the hoop and have a good game. It's that simple. I mean, I know players who they're having a rough shooting night and they just need to hit like a layup. They just need to see it go through the hoop and it just helps your confidence. Then all of a sudden the next three, you make it. Washburn, as I said, they have a center who's 6'9". So he's not just going to be going up against like a guard. Like David McCormick's not going to be going up against some 6'4" dude. But still, like physically in terms of, I mean, you have a slight height advantage. You should have the strength advantage. Crush him. Be Wilt Chamberlain tonight. Put up 52 and 31. Well, not really that part, but sort of. Like dominate the game. Because the flip side of this, if he doesn't have a good game again, and it's against Washburn, like where do you go from there? And how do you rescue a guy's confidence from that point? I don't really even want to entertain that happening, to be honest. It's just too depressing. But I'm sure for the long game, in terms of the season's length, of knowing you are going to need Big Dave at some point, there's going to be a matchup. I mean, it might be the West Virginia game, right? I don't know if you watched them last night, but it's the same cast of characters from a year before when they were already really good at the big spot. Derek Culver, Oscar Tshiebwe are both players who could end up on all Big 12 teams. And then you have Osaboyan coming off the bench. I mean, they have some physical marvels over there. You're going to need Dave in a game like that. So playing the long game, this is kind of a chance for Dave to, I guess the term would be, get a slump buster for the KU big man and work out of this rut, gain some confidence, see the ball go in the hoop, dominate this game, and start to feel better, even if it's not translatable what exactly happens in the game to the next game. Just to have that morale go up could be huge for him. I think beyond that, we'll probably learn a little bit more about some of the guys who maybe have been lost in the rotation. Just in terms of finding out what they do well, you know, how they can fit in. I'd imagine you're going to see Tyon Grant Foster, Tristan Anaruna, and Mitch Lightfoot all get double-digit minutes. Like, this will not be a game where Christian Brown, Marcus Garrett, Ochai will give you 35-plus, unless it's close, which that would be a big surprise. This might be a game where, you know, Garrett, Ochai, and Brown, who combined for like 110 minutes last game, maybe they are each under 30. They're in the high 20s. So there's going to be extra minutes to go around. And those three guys who we've mentioned over the course of this week, they're kind of in rotation jail right now, to where, you know, maybe once every few games, one of them is going to crack the rotation and play 10, 12, 15 minutes of that night. But it's not going to be consistent for any of them. And it's never going to really be two of them on the same night. It'll be a good extended look at all of those guys. And maybe a chance that if they do things well, that Bill Self wants to see them more in action in a future game. Tyon Grant Foster is really interesting because we haven't really gotten a great look at him so far. He's played kind of sparingly. The first couple games, he's playing like 10 minutes a game, but wasn't super involved in the action. I think he played 2 minutes in the Kentucky game. I think KU fans would like to know what they have in him. Not just from like a how good are you perspective, because again, like I don't know how much you're going to learn on a factor like that in this game. But just in terms of like, what's your game like? You know, because we still don't totally know that. Mitch Lightfoot, does he get some more run? And then I think the guy I'm most intrigued of that group has to be Tristan Anaruna. And it's because of like conversations we had throughout the week with Jesse, or just talking about the five-guard lineup for KU. Not only can Tristan Anaruna be a contributor, can he come in and play the three or four, but maybe the best way that Tristan at this point can become a consistent mainstay in the rotation is by playing the five. Because, like I've said countless times, Jalen Wilson is not going to give you all 40 minutes of a game at the small ball five. You're going to need other options because, one, he's just not going to play 40 minutes. Two, if he gets in foul trouble. Three, what happens if you don't want to play the one big look? Well, the only other logical guy to play the five spot outside of Wilson and then your two actual big men with Mitch and Dave, and I guess you could throw Jethro Musket in there as well, would be Tristan Anaruna. He's got the length to do it. I mean, he's 6'8", 6'9", so he's a little bit taller than Jalen Wilson, and he's lengthy too. I mean, his wingspan's like 7'2". He's got the wingspan to play it. We saw it last year, though, in that Tennessee game. Silvio was suspended, I believe, at that point. And I can't remember if Dave was hurt or what the deal was. But KU was down to one center. I forget if it was Doak or Dave. And Anaruna. And he had to play small ball five. And that did not work at all. But that was also his freshman year. You'd think he'd be better suited to do it this year. Because if he can do that, then maybe we do start talking about this team pretty much only playing small ball five. And at that point, see, but that's the thing. Like, I still can't see them being like, all right, Dave, you're just going to get a bunch of DNPs now, do not plays. But it does change things a little bit with how much you can play the five-guard lineups. And it just gives you a little bit more versatility. It gives you some more options to continually run a system like that that you are doing with Jalen Wilson. And you can do that with Tristan Anarumo as well. So interested to see how he plays tonight. All right, FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Coming up next, voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, going to join us, talk a little KU hoops. Maybe reminisce some of the old legacy days of RCST with him and Brett Ballard. That on the other side.
This episode is brought to you by Select One Security and Communications, your one-stop shop for all home technology needs, including, pretty self-explanatory, security. Home security and family security are top priorities for all of us. Protecting your family and your possessions with in-home security systems is one of the wisest choices you will ever make. Derek, did you know that FBI statistics have shown that every 12 seconds a home is burglarized in the United States? Did you know that?
Is that real?
Because you don't check your FBI statistics webpage nearly as often as you should be. Select One Security, guess what? They check it all the time. And they will work with you to make sure your house is protected with a burglar alarm system from top to bottom 24 hours a day. I know on this show, less than a year ago, I suggested that all homes should go backwards in terms of security systems and install a moat around their house. You know, put a drawbridge, a moat, get some alligators, yeah. Some piranhas, stuff like that. I still stand by that statement, but again, I don't own a technology company. Select One is exactly that. They've got some more forward-thinking ideas that I think you should probably hear them out on. Select One Security offers both wired and advanced wireless in-home security systems. Give them a call today at 785-843-3434, or you can visit them online at selectonesecurity.com.
Welcome back. Rock Chalk Sports Talk here, FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN. I'm Derek Johnson, and joined now on the phone by the voice of the Jayhawks. You'll be able to hear him on the call later tonight, Brian Haney. Brian, do you think winning a game like that against Kentucky on Tuesday, is that going to prove to be a big confidence boost for this team and maybe kind of validation that they can win at a high level, that they can defend, that they can kind of win an ugly game, even though you don't necessarily think of a five-guard lineup as being a team who's going to win in an ugly fashion?
Yeah, I think it's going to pay a lot of dividends confidence-wise. For individuals like Jalen Wilson, who was just out of this world with the 21 second-half points, to guys like DeJuan Harris, who now is second nationally in assist-to-turnover ratio and gave you four more steals, guys like that individually have to feel loads better about their contributions on this team. And then collectively, like you said, to grind one out when you're not having a great offensive night, when you're struggling with Kentucky's length, but found ways to overcome that and obviously hunker down and get some stops. And Kentucky helped us with some of that. They're not a good three-point shooting team. And yet it was Kansas that forced them to take more outside shots first half to second half. It really was a big swing in the game. In the first half, Kentucky was getting anything they wanted inside, and when they made some defensive adjustments and forced them to settle for more jumpers, that's when the game flipped. So I think the coaching staff, the players, everybody can feel good about the way they performed in turning that thing around from down 13 to ultimately winning by three. And hopefully it's one of those wins that just looks better and better as the season goes on and Kentucky grows up a ton with eight freshmen that are going to be way better in February than they were on December the 1st. So that's my hope for KU, and I think definitely, you know, at the end of a long, long road trip, because they stayed out on the road, they didn't come home in between like we did as announcers, to come back 2-1 with a couple of quality wins, even though you didn't beat number one, I think you still feel pretty dang good about that.
If you asked Bill Self about Christian's 30-point performance in the second game versus his 13-rebound performance against Kentucky when he struggled to shoot it a little bit more, which do you think he would say was the better game?
Well, they don't win either game without those two contributions coming on the nights they did. But the 13 rebounds probably stand out as much as the 30 points, because when you go to five guards, it means those 6-7 wings have to all of a sudden rebound amidst true centers. And Kentucky's true centers were 6'10 and 7 feet tall. And to get 13 boards amidst those trees inside shows a lot of effort and tenacity. And you just got to tip your cap to Christian for making that happen. So kudos to him. I'm glad you brought that up. I think so many people in the last 24 hours have been talking about Jalen Wilson and DeJuan Harris, and rightfully so. But that 13 rebound performance, I mean, it jumps out on the box score as much as any, because in the first half, like I said, Kentucky was getting about anything they wanted inside. They had a big rebound edge. Kansas comes back to win the battle on the boards, and it's in large part due to Christian Brown. So kudos to him. And that's what you want to see out of a young player who one night to the next, the shots weren't falling at the same clip. You can't always predict or guarantee that your jump shot's going to be working every single night. But hustle plays like rebounds and getting loose balls, plays like that, that's all effort-based. And you can always show up with your optimal level of intensity, even if you don't show up with your same jump shot. And so kudos to him for doing that. And obviously he had the exciting dunk finish with the technical foul following some verbiage at the end of the dunk. And while he was disappointed it led to a tee, I think that just kept fueling his fire throughout the game to keep playing with that degree of tenacity. And I think back to this month a year ago when he had a big denial at the rim against Villanova up in Philadelphia. And you just saw this edge that we didn't realize existed, at least up to then, in this clean-cut Blue Valley Northwest kid. But he's got a little bit of edge to him that I think Kansas can definitely tap into. And in this case versus Kentucky, it's a big reason why he was able to go up against bigger, longer, and in some cases stronger athletes and pull away 13 rebounds.
Yeah, to me he kind of represents like a theme of a lot of guys on this team where it's kind of that like junkyard dog mentality, so to speak. And I just looked through the roster. I think you have a lot of guys like that where it's, you know, the adage of Bill Self calling a guy tough, and that doesn't necessarily all refer to like physical toughness. It refers to mental toughness as well. And I look down the list, guys like Christian Brown or DeJuan Harris, and you can keep going name by name. This seems like a team that Bill Self is really going to enjoy coaching.
Yeah, I think so. Absolutely. And he'll tell you, he likes the challenge of having some veteran players, but in large part, the guys we're leaning on outside of Marcus Garrett and to some degree David McCormick, they're pretty raw. And he kind of likes that every once in a while. And you don't want to have to take that on like Kentucky does every year with four freshman starters and 10 newcomers on the team, eight of which are freshmen. But I think he likes having a little bit of a blank canvas to paint on, if you catch my drift. If they have the intangibles of toughness and a willing attitude to learn and get better and show up with your lunch pail every day, but at the same time, they're moldable and impressionable and can be sculpted. I think he kind of likes that. And so he's got the senior, you know, veteran guard on the floor in Garrett, who hopefully gets healthy soon and we get a chance to see him be all that he can be. But then he's got a lot of other guys that have a lot of God-given ability, but more than anything, have a tough mindset and a want-to factor, which is an old Roy Williams term, that gives him a chance to really sculpt this team into what it can be and the best it can be. And so that's, I think, exciting for a coach 18 years deep in his tenure that's is trying to take this team to similar levels of some of his best teams, but is having to do so with a group that obviously has reloaded a lot from what we saw a year ago.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of cool, like two of those guys with Jalen Wilson and DeJuan Harris redshirted a season ago, and albeit for different reasons. But I think because of situations like that, we just didn't really know what to expect from some of those players and some other guys coming into the year. But, I mean, to this point, I don't think you could have asked for any better of a start from some of these players like Harris and Jalen Wilson.
It's because of that. You know, you're okay with the fact that David's off to a slower start and Marcus is right now not quite been the same guy because you feel like you have a larger sample size with those two and eventually they're going to figure it out. Does David become the All-American candidate that Self said a month ago he might be? That remains to be seen. But we know eventually he's going to be, you know, a 13-9 type guy for Kansas this season. I would have told you 16-10 a month ago, and who knows? You know, this team may evolve in such a way that he's not leaned upon as much, but you know you're going to get a lot of production there, just as you will with Marcus Garrett. But when Jalen and DeJuan give Kansas what they've done these last three games, to me it's the biggest surprise and the most pleasant surprise of this early season. Biggest surprise is Jalen because, I mean, who would have thought he goes for 21 second-half points in a blue-blooded battle and is a guy that now looks like he should start every single night for you? Who would have thought his rebound numbers these last two games would be far and away, you know, the most consistent you're going to get, you know, out of that spot to this point, and the type of numbers that make you think you can go five guards and not give up a ton, because he knows how to manage himself on the block and get his body in positions to get good defensive rebounds for you and some second chances as well offensively. That just opens up a lot of possibilities for this team. And he was a guy that a year ago, when he first signed with Kansas, even though he was top 50, barely, he had some comments that made you think he thought he was way better than what the rankings would indicate. Wasn't a McDonald's All-American, but he talked like he was. And it wasn't in a braggadocious, cocky way. It was just in a self-assured way. I kind of thought to myself the other night, as he's going up against all these McDonald's All-Americans from Kentucky and finally has the big stage that he's been waiting to play on for over a year, this is his chance to validate what he's believed in his mind all along was the case. So while it may be the biggest surprise thus far for us as fans and followers, in his mind, he really felt all along he could be this. That's why he jacks up that three with halfway through the second half, one of those no, yes type shots, when KU previously is like 2 of 15 from beyond the arc, and he takes it, and you're thinking, what is he doing? And then he comes down the floor and hits another one. And at that point, you're okay with him doing whatever he wants, because he's single-handedly putting this team on his shoulders. And then with DeJuan Harris, you know, if Jalen's the biggest surprise to do what he's done, DeJuan is the most pleasant. And by that I mean, we knew we had something with him. We didn't know we'd see it this early. And I think for Kansas fans that don't know, I mean, he didn't practice with the team until second semester last year. But in those second semester practices running with the red team, we saw some flashes that made you think, okay, he's going to be a good pass-first point guard that'll get a steal or two here or there, provide a few minutes of relief of Marcus Garrett off the bench with a high energy level. We weren't forecasting he'd be playing next to Garrett and now be this ball-hawking duo that could be as tough to penetrate with dribble penetration as any, you know, backcourt combo in the conference or country. But that's what he gives Kansas, and it takes some pressure off of Marcus. It brings up your overall level of defensive prowess on the perimeter, and it makes the other four guys on the floor better offensively, because, as Greg Gurley says, he's a pass first, pass second, pass third type guy. That's just his mindset. And on a team with a lot of hungry offensive-minded guys, it helps to have a point guard out there that really doesn't need to score at all. He just wants to make everybody better. I think that's evidenced by his plus-minus numbers these last two games. Plus 21 when he was on the floor versus St. Joseph's, plus 12 the other day versus Kentucky. And that's a stat that the coaching staff is looking to more and more, not only in determining for themselves what lineups to use, but in justifying to the players why they gave playing time to certain guys and not others. And right now, you know, the way Kansas is trending when DeJuan's on the floor is the type of direction that means he needs to stay on the floor. So those two have been tremendous developments for Kansas. Let's just hope they can sustain it to some degree, because, again, pretty small sample size, just three games in.
We're talking with the voice of the Jayhawks, Brian Haney, here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. And, of course, you can hear the game tonight here on KLWN. We're going to have to scoot over kind of midway in the game for KU women's basketball coverage, but we'll have it on our sister station as well, 105.9 KISS. So KU takes on Washburn, and their head coach, Brett Ballard, is a former RCST cohort. Do you have any good Brett Ballard stories that you can share over the airwaves?
Yeah, he was the original co-host with me back in 2002, and great story from our time together. He could only commit to doing the show 3 days a week because he was getting his graduate's degree at that point and still had classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But if he was going to be a full-time co-host, we couldn't have 2 days of the week without his voice on the air. So at the time, there was this popular game show on Comedy Central called Win Ben Stein's Money. And I don't think it was really Ben Stein's money, just like it's not really Terry Bradshaw's money that Fox is giving away right now. But this was a game show we came up with where Brett would record questions on Monday nights or Wednesday nights before he was going to be gone the next day as a game show host. And we said that we were giving away the talent fee or broadcast fee he would have earned had he been there live in studio that day. And they were all sports trivia questions, but some of them were kind of off the wall and wacky. And he had fun with it, and we had fun with it, and it was a way to keep him on the show. But that pot grew pretty big. And it got to the point where, because every time he tried to give away his money and it didn't win. Ultimately, you add it to the pot and it just keeps swelling up bigger and bigger. And you'd have to go back and ask Kevin Romery about this, but we had a time limit on your answers, and you had to, you know, get your answer back to us real fast, within 5 or 10 seconds, because people at this point, way back in 2002, are catching on about Google and the instant, you know, World Wide Web resource that you had at your fingertips if you called in with a computer nearby. And I want to say the pot got up to like $1,400, which, as you know, for local radio is a lot of money to give away. Right. And the guys over at Channel 6, you know, now Midco, with Kevin Romery, and I can't remember if he had DJ or who it was at the time, but they formed like a 3 or 4 person, think like a NFL draft war room, where they're all huddled around their computers, and one guy's on the phone, and we throw out the question, and immediately you can hear the clickety-clack of the typing in the background, and then, boom, they've got the answer 4 seconds later. Well, I don't think they would ever fully admit to that, but I'm pretty sure that's what was going on in the Channel 6 war room. And after 4 months of no one winning Brett Ballard's money, Kevin Romery finally did. So the next time you have him on the show, ask him how he spent Brett Ballard's money. Okay. And there's your fun story about my boy B-Bow back in the day.
I like that. We'll have to definitely question Kevin about that one. We're not going to, I don't think, come away from this game specifically with Washburn, with maybe any vast conclusions. Obviously, if things go right, I said earlier in the show, the thing I'm most interested to see is, you would think this would be a game for David McCormick that he could dominate just with, I mean, they have a 6'9" center, but overall you'd think a size mismatch for him in this game. And it might be a perfect opportunity for him to kind of break out of the rut, because at this point, I think for a center with that talent, he's shooting 25%. I don't think it's just physical. I think at this point, maybe it starts to snowball where you have a few bad plays and then it gets worse from there. So the thing I'm most interested to see is just David McCormick go out there, dominate, even if you come away from it saying, yeah, but it was against Washburn, just get some more confidence in there. Is there anything that you're going to be most interested to see in tonight's game?
I think that's spot on. That was the first thing for me. To be honest, we're taping this conversation today because I'm going to be working on pregame at the time it airs live, and I'm not yet talked to coach to see what they're going to do with Marcus health-wise, if he's going to take the night off or whatever. But that would be the second thing to look at. And again, who knows? I mean, coach told us pretty definitively on Tuesday he wasn't going to play, and then he wound up playing 3 hours later, so you never know. But I think it might be a night where you sit him down if there's any lingering symptoms that could be benefited by a night off. And keep in mind, these guys are playing 4 games in 8 days. This is a grueling stretch. And so it would be my hope that if there's anybody that's a little bit nicked, you get a chance to get some minutes early, but rest late, empty the bench, get a guy like Tristan Inaruna, who hardly played after he didn't box out on that missed free throw, get him a chance to get some extended run and get some confidence back. For guys like Bryce Thompson that have watched DeJuan Harris light it up the last couple of games, give him some extended run, you know, to settle in a little bit more. And hopefully, you know, anything that needs healing up will take the chance to do that as well from guys like Garrett and company. So it's going to get a lot tougher, obviously, with Creighton on the horizon and North Dakota State on Saturday. And so hopefully against a very good Washburn team that Brett Ballard's doing a great job coaching, Kansas can, you know, be that top 10 D1 team that we expect them to be, get a nice lead, and then get a chance to rest some guys down the stretch.
Well, before I let you go, Brian, this is also the 64th anniversary of Wilt Chamberlain's KU debut. Pretty good, 52-31. Do you have a favorite Wilt statistic or story?
Yeah, I'll give you a great Wilt story. You know, the day he came back to have his jersey hung in the rafters at Allen Fieldhouse after all those years of not returning, supposedly because he felt like Kansas fans wouldn't embrace him after he never delivered on a national title, even though he went to triple overtime with North Carolina back in 57 and couldn't pull it out. He felt like Kansas fans were upset with him, and so he stayed away for all those years. And he comes back late in life and knows that he doesn't have a ton of time left, and yet he stays there after the game, sweating profusely through his Kansas letter jacket as a line forms that goes out the door of Allen Fieldhouse and down Naismith Drive halfway to Oliver Hall. all people wanted to get his autograph, and he stayed and signed every last autograph. And I was there that day with my dad, and I didn't know Wilt was going to be signing autographs, so I didn't bring anything cool to have him sign, but I had a KU hat and got to meet the legend and shake his hand and get my hat signed. And to this day, it hangs in my office at Allen Fieldhouse, because that was such a special day. And my dad had told me about, you know, this is the most dominant player in the history of the game. And of course, I'm a Michael Jordan generation kid. And I'm like, really, better than MJ? And my dad's like, oh yeah, you should have seen him. And so that was special. And the fact that he would do that literally and sign, I don't know, countless autographs for well over an hour after the game, and really had that homecoming on the end of what was kind of a curious absence, you know, that clearly was not warranted, but in his mind he thought that, you know, he wouldn't be embraced after not winning a title there. I was so glad to see it in like that, and to get to come home and to get to make the comments he made about, you know, what a great place Kansas is to play, and the time that he had here, how much he loved that. So that's my favorite Wilt story, because it's one I got to witness. But for those like Max Falkenstein that had a chance to actually see him up close, yeah, it would have been incredible. And you know, another great story, Hank Booth could tell you this one better than me, but he used to have a radio show, Wilt did, called Flippin' with the Dipper. And Flippin' was Flippin' Records. And he was a DJ like you when you slide over to 105.9 on KISS. Only I think he probably had a more soulful voice. No offense, you've got a great play-by-play voice, but he was Will Chamberlain. And, ladies, tonight we are flipping with the Dipper. You know, and so just imagine, he already has all this star appeal from being a basketball player, but then he was playing the rhythm and blues on Flipping with the Dipper. And that was here in Lawrence. And so you have to ask Hank Booth about that, because, yeah, of all of the people in our illustrious Great Plains media history that have come through the studios and all that, nobody tops Will Chamberlain. So ask Hank Booth next time you get him on the show. I've given you homework assignments for Kevin Romery and Hank Booth. How about that? But hopefully it'll lead to some good follow-up conversation.
Yeah, I've got them all written down. And Brian Haney, also a former RCST. I mean, we might have the Mount Rushmore of our conversations today between all the guys you mentioned with Hank Booth, yourself, Brett Ballard, maybe. I don't know. There's a lot of guys that could go on. Yeah. Scott Pollard and all those guys. Will Chamberlain. But, Brian, thank you so much for the time, and have fun on the call tonight.
Brett and I started this show in July of 2002. I want to say it was July 25th. And so it's amazing to think where life has taken us both in the last 18 years. But he's one of my favorite guys. Just cheer him on every single chance I get, because he's such a great coach and great human being. So thanks for bringing that up, and it's fun to take a walk down memory lane for sure.
All right, thanks again, Brian.
Thanks, Derek.
All right, that is Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, joining us here on Rock Jock Sports Talk, FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN. It's 1 hour down, two to go.
This episode is brought to you by Tommy's Express Car Wash. Join the Tommy Club. You can download the Tommy Club app and enjoy endless washing for one low price, Derek. That means unlimited car washes, unlimited clean, shiny, and dry, unlimited use of exclusive app lane, which, by the way, I've taken advantage of. It's kind of like the express lane on the highway. You don't necessarily like to lord over everybody else, but when you're zooming through and getting in to get your car washed first, like, that's why it's called Tommy's Express, right? You get unlimited access to all their locations, unlimited guest service, and perhaps most importantly, unlimited happiness, Derek. And I think that's something that we just don't emphasize nearly enough in life. I'm looking at your car right now. I'm thinking it could maybe use a trip to Tommy's Express. What do you got going on later? Thinking maybe you should stop there on your way home. You going to at least consider it?
I will absolutely be going to Tommy's Express Car Wash.
Now, the outside of your car, the exterior, it does look okay. Where my concern begins is the interior of your car.
Yeah. When you have a dog.
I don't think the inside of that car has seen a deep cleaning in quite some time.
No, when you have a dog, when you have a golden retriever, you got hair everywhere. And they have those vacuums that, you know, it's going to get out for you. So, yeah, I'm definitely making an appointment. Tommy's Express Car Wash.
What I love about the vacuums at Tommy's Express, the cord comes down from the top. So you're not having to try and wrap it around your car and getting yourself into a pretzel. No, very flexible vacuums. You want to go to the left side of the car, the right side of your car, you're perfectly good. Tommy's Express Car Wash. Wash, rinse, repeat.
Welcome back in. Rock Chalk Sports Talk, FM 101.7,
1320 KLWN. I'm Derek Johnson in for Nick Schwert today. We got another replacement coming at us. Jack Johnson joins us now from Fog.net and 24/7 Sports, works alongside Scott Chasen over at Fog.net. Jack, did you get a sense that Scott, your coworker, enjoyed messing with everybody's minds about the Marcus Garrett stuff?
It was definitely a unique situation, to say the least. I know a lot of different reports going on out there, but luckily he was able to actually be in Indianapolis. And, you know, I was following along that originally Gary Bedore's tweet that Marcus was going to be out for that game. And then Scott said that he was out there warming up on the floor. So it was definitely a confusing and nerve-wracking about 30 minutes or so to see if arguably KU's one of their best players out there was even going to be able to play Kentucky. Because even though he was sick for that game, I'm not even sure that they would have pulled out there if Marcus wasn't able to go.
We're talking with Jack Johnson here. He writes with Scott at 24/7 Sports, Fog.net. Did you get to go to the Champions Classic as well with Scott?
I was actually not able to. They had, a limited roster in terms of media credentials. So Scott was the only one able to go down to Indianapolis. So he was the eyes and ears down there for Fog.net. So I was unfortunately just having to follow along on my TV like many others out there and just live tweeting the game and just zooming in on the press conference afterwards.
Is there anything that you're going to be personally on the lookout for in tonight's game? Obviously against a lesser opponent with Washburn. Do you think there's anything that KU can learn from this game?
Well, one of the main things that sticks out to me is we're all kind of waiting for that outbreak performance for David McCormick. Bill Self's been really high on him in practice and still believes that he can be the go-to scorer and leading scorer for this team. But obviously through the first three games, he struggled to get going. He looks a little sped up on both ends of the floor. This is sort of that game where he can take a deep breath. It is a lesser opponent, Washburn, and maybe get that performance that Self's been saying he's capable of doing. Not saying it should change anybody's mind if David McCormick goes out and puts up 20-10, but he needs to get a little confidence as they move through their schedule. I know that Scott actually pointed out in Indianapolis in the first couple minutes of the Kentucky game, the bench was very motivational with McCormick in the early parts of the game. Anytime he made a stop on defense, got a rebound, they were really energetic and kind of trying to cheer him on to get that confidence. Because if KU is going to make a deep run later in this tournament and as they get better throughout the season, McCormick's going to have to be a big part of that offense. So he's going to need that double-double performance tonight or the next couple games to get that confidence to prove that he can be that go-to scorer or leading scorer for this basketball team.
And KU coming off the win against Kentucky. What were your biggest takeaways from that win for KU?
Well, one of the main things that stuck out to me as the game was close down the stretch, I wanted to see who was going to be the guy with the ball in his hands when KU needed a bucket. As it turned out, it looked like Ochai Agbaji was that guy. He had a clutch three-pointer down the stretch, had the breakaway dunk when stole the ball, and then knocked down the two free throws to put him up by three with 10 seconds left. The takeaway for me was, if this is in crunch time, who are you giving the ball to? Marcus Garrett was sick. David McCormick wasn't really getting much going offensively. Christian Brown was struggling to shoot the ball from deep. And Ochai, though he, I think, turned in 17 or 18 points, he was struggling as well. So I wanted to see who was going to be that guy to step up, say, give me the ball, I've got this. And it looked like Ochai Agbaji, at least through these first three games, has been confident enough to take on that role. I think he shot 15 to 16 shots per game down in Fort Myers, and then he shot 17 against Kentucky. So he's definitely had a step up in having that confidence to shoot the ball when the game's on the line. So that's a really good sign for KU, mainly because Agbaji can be that breakout-type performer like a Wayne Selden in his junior year. And when he's going from deep, that's going to only open up the offense that much more.
Do you think coming away from that game, is Ochai, is it Jalen Wilson? Who do you think would be the most likely All-American candidate for KU?
I would probably say All-American candidate. I would lean towards Agbaji just because he's been so consistent these first three games. Jalen obviously had a big game against Kentucky. I just want to see more of that output. I think he's a very capable shooter. He's a good slasher. He's excellent on the offensive glass. He's good in transition defense. So I think Jalen can be in the running for that, but if I had to put my money on it, I'd likely just say Agbaji. He's got a little bit more experience than Jalen. Obviously, Wilson only got a couple minutes played into his freshman year before an ankle injury ended his season. But I think Agbaji would be the guy that I'd put my money on to maybe get some All-American recognition.
You mentioned David McCormick tonight is the guy you're going to be keeping an eye on. Is there somebody who maybe hasn't played a ton in the first games, whether it's, you know, Mitch Lightfoot, Tristan Inaruna, Tyon Grant Foster, somebody of that ilk that you're interested just to see what they can kind of bring to the table that we haven't got a great sample size so far on?
I'm very interested to see if Tyon Grant Foster can be the guy they've talked about a lot in practice. He had a performance that self said he hasn't seen in a very long time where he was able to take over offensively. And in the first couple games, he just hasn't been able to stay on the floor, whether that be his defensive performance or just not putting enough shots up. This is one of those games where he can go and find that confidence. Getting open from three, I think he's got an excellent jump shot. It's a quick release. So he's going to get his opportunity tonight. Hopefully KU gets up by enough where he can stay on the floor, get 15, 20 minutes in this game, because he could be a valuable contributor off the bench as the season goes on. They're going to need that depth. We've seen a guy like DeJuan Harris come off the bench and actually play more minutes than Bryce Thompson has because of his ability to be creating havoc in the passing lanes. He's great passing the ball. He's quick. Those are the types of things that can keep you on the floor. And if Grant Foster can be pretty good defensively and start knocking down some outside shots, that's going to boost his minutes per game as we move on.
We're talking with Jack Johnson here. He writes for 24/7 Sports and Fog.net. I do want to talk a little recruiting. KU landed over the past week and a half. They got a big recruit in football. They got a 2021 commit for basketball. Let's start out with basketball. KU lands another JUCO commit, so it's their second straight year of getting a junior college commit. What is KU getting in this next kid for 2021?
Well, I haven't gotten the best chance to look at his film, per se. I haven't gotten much on him yet, but it is important just from a fundamental standpoint with KU going a little bit of that JUCO route, because those are guys that can really impact your program. We know that Kentucky likes to go and get their five-star recruits and, you know, bolster their guys as freshmen, but another important part of building a sustainable winner is getting those JUCO guys. I know that KU obviously has Tyon Grant Foster right now, and he can still be a big contributor, but when you get those JUCO guys, they also have a little bit of experience. They can be as talented as some guys that maybe came straight from high school to Division I. But it's important when you get those guys on your team that they have the talent, they have the experience, and they are more than capable of competing at Division I level.
Do you think this might signal, though, that maybe there's more to the idea that KU might struggle a little bit in recruiting given everything going on with the NCAA? Because before you landed back-to-back years with the junior college commit, I think the last one was Mario Little, which that's about a 7 or 8 year dry spell in between.
It can be difficult a little bit, and I think another difficult part has just been this COVID situation, how it's impacted recruiting. And it has been a while since KU's landed those JUCO players. Obviously, you mentioned Mario Little. But in the grand scheme of things, I think that KU is just trying to bolster their next couple teams any way they possibly can, whether that be the 3 and 4 star recruits. I think Christian Brown was a three or four star recruit coming out of high school. I mean, they can live with getting those 3 and 4 star recruits and then also adding on those JUCO players. So they may not be bringing in the top caliber multiple five star guys as Kentucky can every single year, but it's not necessarily a bad thing when they're having to develop more of their players and maybe go the JUCO route or get those three star guys out of high school.
Do you think this is also from a, I guess, developmental standpoint, like you're kind of alluding to, maybe a chance for KU to play more of the Villanova style? I mean, we've already seen it sort of this year with Jalen Wilson specifically at the five. And I look at the three commits for KU in 2021. You have power forward and Zach Clements, who's known for his elite shooting. And your other two commits are both listed as power forwards. One's a 6'7" power forward who might slide down to the wing. And the other is this kid who's a 6'7", 260-pound or 6'8", 260-pound power forward. Kind of looks like to me that they are embracing the small ball lineups with what they're bringing in.
Absolutely. And I think in this new age of college basketball, you're going to have that power forward that can slide towards that wing spot, be able to defend on the perimeter, and have to knock down some shots from the outside. We saw that in the Final Four game with Villanova a couple of years ago. Villanova was able to have their stretch four guy knock down threes and almost, you know, get KU out of that game early because they just didn't have a power forward that was able to guard that. Now KU has that in Jalen Wilson. Christian Brown's even a 6'7" type of guy that they can play that smaller ball lineup. But it's very important in this age of college basketball to be able to have that 6'7", 6'8", 6'9" guy that can almost play a little bit like a guard, because KU is quicker on the floor when they've got their five-guard lineup. They are better defensively when they have that five-guard lineup, and I think they're just better shooting overall.
We're talking with Jack Johnson of 24/7 Sports and Fog.net here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Beyond the basketball trail, KU football also landing a big commit. Now, we've seen some other kids kind of decommit of late, but the latest is Garfield Lawrence, and he's a three-star prospect, top 1,000 in the 24/7 sports rankings. How big of a commit is this for KU football?
I think right now, just in with how this season, we've seen a lot of decommits. It is a positive sign to be able to see it. They're still trying to load up in this Les Miles era on getting those recruits, because the biggest thing right now is building with those high school guys. KU, one of the biggest reasons they've struggled so much this year is they're relying a lot on those true freshmen to come in and play. So the more they're bringing in these guys after this class, it's really important for KU to keep adding on to those type of guys, keeping those commits, because that's been the biggest part of this rebuild. They're not trying to go too heavy in the JUCO part of things. They're just trying to stick to the high school recruiting. And so it's important for Les Miles and his coaches to land those guys, keep those guys, and really end this year on a positive, because KU's likely not going to end the season with a win. But if you keep a couple recruits here and there and have that positive showing from the freshmen that are playing, it's only going to make things that much better heading into next season.
Do you think specifically, though, with a player like Lawrence, I mean, he slots into second in the class only behind Devin Neal. Is that something that can maybe get some more momentum for KU football going forward, in that, hey, we're not having a great season, but we were still able to get on one of our highest recruits at this point in the year?
Absolutely. I think it definitely is a positive and makes you next season. And you never know what's going to happen down the road. I mean, right now you're seeing at KU all these freshmen playing. It's whether they want to believe it or not, it's a great pitching point to say that you can come in here and start from day one. So if KU is able to land a couple more guys into this season, that's just going to make the build part of it feel so much better, because they're bringing in a lot of these young talent, and these guys are getting experience in a year that's been so unique. And part of this rebuild is that it's about getting the right guys here. The wins may not show up for a couple of years, but hopefully by the time Les Miles is done, he's built a good group of guys that can take this program to the next level.
He is Jack Johnson. You can check out all his work at 24/7 Sports and Fog.net. Jack, thank you for the time and making your RCST debut.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
All right, that was Jack Johnson of 24/7 Sports, Fog.net, joining us here today on RCST, filling in and doing a good job for Scott Chasen there. Normally joins us on a Thursday. And yeah, just to kind of echo what Jack was saying, I think it's a huge deal to get the Garfield Lawrence kid, just because, you know, it is proof that even in this down season, it's not totally going to affect the recruiting. I mean, you've seen kids decommit, and that is, I'm sure, sort of a product of that. But to get one going back in the other way, in the right direction, that seems like a pretty huge deal to me. And as far as with the basketball front, I do think it is interesting that, you know, maybe they are being limited a little bit by the NCAA, but I feel like they're taking advantage of it to the fullest, where normally if you have a bunch of five-star kids that are committing to your school, you're kind of like, you're not going to say no to a kid who's going to be like a first-round pick. It's great for your program. It brings in talent. You're not going to say no to talent. If you're not getting those kids, then you can switch, though, to being more picky about what style of player you want. Like, if you get the top three players in the recruiting class and they all want to go to your school, you're going to say, okay, I'll adjust my style to what these players have. But if you're not getting those kids, you're going to bring in the players tailor-made to fit what system you want to run. And I think, given especially with this year, has shown that Bill Self and KU can have success with more of the Villanova-style lineup, which they've done with Jalen Wilson, and I think that might be the trend that they're going in, at least in the near future, with COVID and the NCAA stuff maybe making recruiting a little bit harder on the Jayhawks. But they're still going to get good players. They'll be able to develop and put them into the system. We all know the answers. All right, FM 101.7, 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Coming up next, let's talk a little Chiefs football. I'm Derek Johnson. You're listening to RCST.